Hello, welcome to Have Roots, We'll Travel. If this is your first visit, really welcome aboard. For those returning, we will be continuing our exploration of Les Filles du Roi. My name is Lisa Elvin-Stautari, and I am a genealogist and a passionate traveler. A lot of the videos that I intend on doing will be focusing on locations and travel and that sort of thing, but I've sort of deep dived into this series, and I'm on, I believe, number 48, and just amazing. It just keeps going on and on. And so I am a Filles du Roi descendant, and this is a particular near and dear to my heart. So in each video, just if this is your first visit, we take a Filles du Roi and we examine her life from beginning to end and see the travels that she has taken, because it is important to know where they've been and where they ended up, because that's all part of the story. These women are truly the founding mothers of Quebec, for sure, and North America to some extent. And I welcome any and all suggestions. And if you have a Filles du Roi that I haven't done yet, which is many because there's about 700 of them, please feel free to put her in the comments below, and I will put her on my list. At this point, I am literally going with what the viewers are requesting, and a few of my own too that I've kind of looked over. And please don't forget to subscribe and click the like button and the notification so that when I post new content, which is about at the moment twice a week. And I also want to let you know that I'm on Facebook and I do have a website called Have Roots, We'll Travel. So without further ado, let's get started. The Filles du Roi program was a program begun in 1663 by the Intendant Jean Talon. I do have a video called Les Filles du Roi, the program 2.0 that you can find on this channel by searching. And in it, I really go into all the nuts and bolts. It's about 20 minutes long, and it really gives you a historical perspective of what was going on and how the program worked in particular. With that, let's turn our attention to the lady that we are going to be looking at today. She truly is probably so far one of my favorites. So the Filles du Roi we're studying this week is Jeanne Savonnet, and she has been probably the one that has been the most requested by viewers. She also happens to be the Filles du Roi of my best friend as well. And with that, let's get to know Jeanne and find out where she's from and the travels that she took. So we don't know a great deal about where in Paris Jeanne is from. So I've just put out the map somewhere, and this is where our protagonist of the week is born. She's born sometime in 1647. Her parents were Jacques Savonnet and Antoinette Babillette. And that's about all we know. So, with that being said, let's find out when she, came to New France. So Jeanne would come to New France on the ship called La Nouvelle France, and she arrived in Quebec City on July 31st, 1670. And she was joined by on this ship by at least four other Filles du Roi that we've studied as well. So 1670, 1669, these are the peak years of the program. So a lot of ladies were coming to New France to begin the great project of let's make a country. So the groom that Jeanne selects, and who selects her, is his name was Jean Soucy dit Lavigne, and he was from Saint-Wolfram in Abbeville in Picardy, France. His parents were Claude Soucy and Françoise Devem. He arrived in New France as a soldier with the Carignan Regiment on August 15, 1665. I just want to go, if this is your paternal great-grandfather, I want to just kind of talk a little bit about where he's from. Abbeville is a commune, which, as you know, is a township in the Somme department and the Hauts-de-France, which means the Upper France region. It's obviously located on the River Somme. And it dates from about 831, so it's a very, very old place. The church where Jean might have been baptized, I don't have confirmation, but I'm pretty sure, dates from, it was constructed in 1488 and used throughout the 16th and 17th century. And then the original design was completed throughout the years. So it's just amazing that it still stands today. A lot of these churches, you know, are no more, but in Jean's case, he does have that church. So let's get to know, you know, how they connect up. So in true Jeanne fashion, we don't know anything about, you know, where exactly she was born. Well, it turns out there's no date. One of the reasons we don't know is that we don't have the marriage record. The best we can deduce is that they were married by December of 1670, which I presume is probably earlier than that, as their first child is born in September of 1671. We believe that they were married on Ile d'Orléans. Okay, so that's just, you know, supposition. So anybody have any more information, please, please put it in the comments below and share. So Jean and Jeanne would actually settle in a place we haven't looked at before called Île-aux-Grues, which, and it's also attached to Île-aux-Oies. Both of these are islands connected in the St. Lawrence River up north from Île-d'Orléans. So let's take a look at these very unusual islands. And as I've stated, this is the very first time in this series that we've explored this. And at the start of the French colony, these two islands were actually drawn as one on maps. And it was only in 1633 that the Jesuit priest Paul Lejeune, after an expedition, stated that, hey, there's two islands here, and one of them is filled with snow goose, hence the Île-aux-Oies, which is an island of goose, that they would call it that. So that's how it all came to be. By 1646, Charles de Montmagny became the seigneur of these islands as well, as La Rivière du Sud, and throughout the next couple of hundred years, the ownership of these islands passed through many hands. Notably, the Augustine nuns owned it, and they would use these islands as a base to send the products they made, notably cheese and other byproducts, and, you know, hand knit things, and they would send these to Quebec City and on to other places. By 1964, so we've advanced 300 years here, Île-aux-Oies, the island of goose, was purchased by a private hunting club, and now the island is completely privately owned. Île-aux-Grues is still part of the municipality of Quebec, and it is a very small place with about 146 inhabitants, as according to Wikipedia. And the children are flown to school each day, the children of the island, and during the summer there is a ferry that operates as well, but in the winter the only way to reach the island is by plane. So it is truly remarkable. And the tourism that has expanded beyond the scope of hunters. As you can imagine, it is an amazing place to just kind of get away from it all. And people go there just really to disconnect. And it is kind of a really special place as part of Quebec. Not as well known as other touristy spots, which is exactly its drawing card. So Jean and Jeanne, you know, would settle there for quite some time. I also want to draw your attention that these islands were also known at different parts. So if somehow your descent, your tree gets into this area, I want you to know that it's also known as Île Saint-Marie, La Bécard, Île Hôpital, Île des Prairies, Île des les Jones, that must have been during the English occupation, and Île des Brousses. So all kinds of names that they kind of went through, but these are the names that they, you know, are historically known as. So Jean and Jeanne would have four children, their firstborn, Anne, married Jean le Bel, and had four children, all of whom make it to adulthood. And then she married Jacques Bois, and they had eight children together, five of whom reached adulthood. Pierre married Elisabeth Fourqueux and had 13 children. 10 of whom made it to adulthood. Marianne marries Charles Petit and had one son who died at 17, and her two other marriages were much later to Robert Gollet and Charles Dubois. So no descendancy from that particular line. Guillaume would never marry, but he would father one natural child who would and did make it to adulthood. So this is an interesting line as well. So Jean would pass away suddenly. We do not have a death date. We believe he may have drowned. He dies between April 16, 1677 and August of 1679. I want to draw your attention, though, that there is an Association des Familles Soucis, and I've included the website, so his legacy lives on despite his very short amount of time on this earth. And of course, Jeanne is left with four children. What does she do? Let us explore our heroine and see what and who she selects. So the next fellow that Jeanne, marries, his name is Damien Berube, and he was born in 1647 in Rochefort in Normandy. Rochefort is a commune in the Normandy region in northern France. It's fairly well known, and you can see how north it is by the map that I've drawn. The church where he would have been baptized is pictured up north, up on the upper right of your screen. His parents' names were Robert Berube and Catherine Faircoq, and he was a mason, a very talented one, it appears, and he arrived in Quebec in 1671. He was accompanied by Le Sœur de la Boutellerie, Jean-Baptiste Deschamps, Robert Lévesque, and Jacques Miville, all of whom came across at this time or were part of the expedition, and they would all play a part in life at Rivière Well in the future. He would remain single in New France until Jeanne Savonnet would become available. Now, I have no idea how they met. There was no Facebook at the time or Match.com, but I suspect that, it was a tight-knit community in terms of les filles du roi, in terms of people who knew them, and I suspect that somebody, kind of said, hey, we've got a widow here. She's, beautiful, and she has four children. And, so he went up and I presume met her, and a union was formed. Now, remember, we don't know the exact time that Jean Soucy would have died. It's possible that, it took some time to find the fellow, or it might have been immediate. I don't know. But they were married, that much we do know, at Lislay on August 22nd, 1679. That's how we know that Jean would have had to pass away before that time. This is a very old parchment of their marriage record. It was almost impossible to read. And this is a little church at that location. Now, where do they, set up? So Damien and Jeanne settled at Rivière Well. The name of this river and of this town was said to be named in honor of a man named Douel, D-H-O-U-E-L, and it just somehow morphed into Well. And he was a member of that company of the 100 Associates that I've talked about, and he was a colleague of Seigneur de Champlain. The Seigneurie of Rivière Well was granted in 1672 by the Intendant Jean Talon to Jean-Baptiste François Deschamps de la Boutellerie, a nobleman from Normandy. The Seigneurie was thereafter called the Boutellerie, which, by the way, actually means bottle factory. I'm not sure of the origins of this in France. I'm told that it is Jean-Baptiste François' grandmother who was their family. So there's lots of information to be found there if you are so inclined. The seigneur of this place really worked his land and was a forward thinker. He actually lived on this land and in fact was buried there in 1703. But let's get back to Damien and Jeanne and their life together. And they actually had, obviously, Damien had land here, and he was very closely tied to the Seigneur at that time. So Jeanne moves into a new phase of her life. She had been, you know, on an island somewhere. Now she's like in the middle of the society of Rivière. Yeah, well, he was small, but obviously her new husband had connections. So let's have a look at the family they create. Jeanne Marguerite, their first child, would marry René Plour and would have six children, five of whom would reach adulthood before she died at 28. Pierre, their second child, married Marie-Geneviève Dencausse and would have 14 children, 10 of whom reached adulthood. Ignace married Angélique Marguerite Ouellet but did not have any children, probably due to his untimely death at 26. Marie-Joseph would pass away at 4 years of age. And then we have Thérèse and Maître. Thérèse would pass away in infancy. Maître would marry Angélique Millet de Duchesne, whose father was Jean Millet, who was the son of Marie-Catherine Bayon that we profiled in video number 22. They would go on to have 10 children, all of whom made it to adulthood. So you can see how we're beginning to see that connection of, you know, the Miville story is truly one of amazing, amazing things. But the fact that we now have the Bérubés merging with the Mivilles, you know, it just becomes this incredible legacy. Suddenly, this new life, about 9 years after they marry, March 7, 1688, Damier passes away, a victim of the influenza epidemic at the time. A couple of days later, two of their daughters die the same day as well. So the grief that Jeanne must have suffered is just, it's incomprehensible to me. To lose your husband, to lose the second husband, and then to lose two more children. The Bérubés Association put up a headstone for them. On the left, we have got a snapshot of the actual death record. And then there is a monument as well, put there by the Association des Bérubés. And this website and the Association des Bérubés, just truly remarkable. You can see it. I just took a snapshot of the website. I put the information down in the comments so that you can link if this is something, your direct line. Just truly remarkable. So I would urge you to explore this resource as well. The man that would eventually become Jeanne's third husband is part of the Miville family, that amazing family that we've talked about in several videos. He was born in 1634 in the Notre-Dame de la Brouage in Rochefort, and his parents were Pierre Miville de la Suisse and Charlotte Magus. And let's talk a little bit about the town he was from. Brouage was founded in 1555, and it was founded on very swampy land which had previously been underwater. Its name, Brouage, comes from the surrounding mixture of water and clay, which was called Brou. The economy was based on salt and access to the sea. Brouage was actually known for producing salt that was black in color, which was often sold to the royal family. Brouage exported large quantities of salt by land and sea as early as the 15th century. The town was fortified between 1630 and 1640 by Cardinal Richelieu as a Catholic bastion in order to fight against the neighboring Protestant town of La Rochelle. Gradually, the harbor shifted, it sifted up in the last part of the 17th century, leaving the town stranded and useless as a port. It fell into ruin. And the town's most celebrated son, however, is the French navigator Samuel de Champlain. Yeah, there he is again, who lived there when he was young before being the co-founder of the French settlement of Quebec and Acadia. And you can see it's very, very close to the sea. And this area was renowned for a lot of the, you know, that kind of fishermen and that kind of explorers. I've given you a couple of maps. This is Brouage currently. This is the church at Brouage that exists still to this day. as we continue to explore the Mivis story as relation to Francois. Francois would accompany his father and mother, Pierre and Charlotte, along with his older brother Jacques, who we profiled in episode 22, and his four sisters. Francois received, along with his father, concessions of land in the Seigneurie of Lauzon by Jean de Lauzon himself, the intendant of the Compagnie of the Hundred Associates. Lauzon would also become a future governor of New France. By 1665, Pierre, Francois, and Jacques were among those who received land in what would become La Pocatière. They were to establish a new Swiss colony, but unfortunately this did not work out. And so for a time, Francois would reside in Lauzon, and he established a family of 11 children with his wife Marie Langlois. After her death, he moved to Rivière-Well to assume guardianship of the orphan children of his brother Jacques in 1689. So you can imagine what was going on. So we have Jeanne, who loses her husband and two of her daughters in 1688. Then 1689, Francois has to assume, he loses his wife and then his brother, and then moves to Rivière-Well. So now we have them both living in the same. It's quite a story, actually. So let's have a look at when they actually got together. So Francois and Jeanne were married on November 7, 1692. What I find interesting is there's a whole 4 years about that she didn't get remarried. So she kind of did it on her own, got to know Francois, I'm assuming. They were both busy with their families. And I think that's kind of remarkable that she was strong enough to not, you know, obviously marry the first man she saw. So I like that. I like, it tells me something about Jeanne. And this is their marriage certificate, and they were married at Rivière-Well. So this is probably my favorite slide that I've created in all these videos. Why? Because when I started figuring out how many kids were involved here from yours, mine, and ours, it really reminded me of that movie from the 1960s, except this is the 1690s. So the household of Francois and Jeanne would include 4 Soucy children, 4 Berube children, 11 Miville children, 4 of whom from Francois' brother Jacques. Okay, so this is like a lot of people. Okay, I can't even imagine the house they would have lived in. And just like in that story, Yours, Mine, and Ours, in that movie, they go ahead and have one more child that is theirs. And I love it. Marie Françoise, she would end up marrying Prisque Boucher and have 13 children, 9 of whom made it to adulthood. So Francois would pass away on the 23rd of November, 1711, and he is buried at Rivière-Well. He and Jeanne would have been married almost 20 years. He was the longest marriage that she had. Jeanne would live another 10 years, dying at the age of 71. She lived a life that is so remarkable, not only for its longevity, but also ultimately she would, you know, kind of define, you know, a woman of substance. And she would end up actually, as of 1729, having 101 descendants, which is quite a significant amount. And she went from living in Paris to living on an island in the middle of the St. Lawrence to establishing a new home at Rivière-Well. And, you know, finally, you know, establishing this amazing family, if you will. And I think that, and she would, you know, carry on finally without the husbands, but to have had that much tragedy and that much success too, you know, I think is truly remarkable. So if you descend from the Miville section of Jeanne's life, there is an association, the Descendants de Pierre Miville. And I would urge you to, you know, check that out as well. And here's a book I need to read. I haven't been able to get my hands on it. And it is in French, as far as I know. And I do read French. Not as well as English, obviously, but I'll definitely do it. It's on my uppermost on my list. Probably when I get back to Quebec, I will check this out. But I would urge any of you, if you have access to a library and want to look up this book, definitely check it out. And with that, we end another extraordinary episode. Jen Savonet is probably one of the most interesting I have seen. She just is truly a woman of substance, and endured and persevered and took care of her home, took care of her children. She was truly a remarkable woman. And we salute her and her contributions to us and to New Friends, because she really made a truly remarkable life. Thank you, Jen. And with that, we end another episode, and I will see you on episode number, I believe, 49. All right, we'll see you soon. Au revoir.